Match of my life. Life stories and greatest games.
Radio City Talk.
Okay, no single figure has made such a vast impression in such a short space of time at Everton Football Club. His presence galvanised the team in the 80s, and when he left after 19 months, he'd captured a place in the hearts of all Evertonians. It is Andy Gray. Let's welcome him. Hello, Andy.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Great, thank you. Thank you for your company today on Match of My Life. Obviously, we'll
pleasure.
Get...
Pleasure. I almost didn't recognise myself when you were introducing me.
Modest as well.
I thought, are we on the wrong line here?
Well, actually, it amazed me when I looked through some of your stats, how many games you'd actually played for some of the other teams preceding Everton. So let's just capture that first of all. Obviously, Dundee was your starting point, but hugely important times at Aston Villa and Wolves for you, Andy.
Yeah, they were. I mean, Dundee United, in actual fact, was a brilliant start for me. I had the guy called Jim McLean, who was the coach, and Jim was a coach way beyond his time, a forward-thinking coach, a great coach, a demanding coach. And for a kid of 17, the 2 years I had for him were just sensationally good for me and when I came to England. Obviously, Villa had an unbelievably good success. They'd just been promoted from Division 2, as it was then, into the First Division. And Ron Saunders was building a side, a mix of experience and very talented young players. And we took off like a rocket. It was a great 4 years. But I did have a fallout with him. And I ended up moving to Wolves, which was, let's just say, checkered.
Oh, have we still got you there, Andy?
Yeah,
sorry, I thought we lost you for a second. Just tell us a bit about the goals you scored at Villa. So 29 essentially won you the Golden Boot while joint with Malcolm McDonald. At the age of 19, surely you could never have conceived you'd have been hitting those heights so early.
No, it was phenomenal for me to come down to England at 19 to join a club, to be playing against Liverpool's, Manchester United's, Arsenal's, Chelsea's, Spurs, all these great teams. That I'd sort of watched on TV as a kid. I was actually locking horns with them in front of 40,000, 50,000 crowds. It was sensational. And, you know, after the sort of initial year I came down and sort of found my feet, the second year was just... It was a year I will never forget, obviously. He talked about, you know, being joint top goal scorer, winning the Golden Boot with Malcolm. I needed 3 goals. I know that we had one game left because we had played so many games and it was on a Wednesday night. We played West Brom, a local derby of all things. And I needed 3 goals to join Malcolm on 29. It was the last game of the season. And I got a hat-trick that night, and that's what put me level with him. And it was, you know, culminated, obviously, in winning the Young Player and Player of the Year, which I'm extremely proud about. The first one to do it, the only Scot to do it. And only 2 other players have done it since then. And that for me, is just a testimony to how good a year I had.
Yeah, you're not in bad company, are you? Cristiano Ronaldo and Gareth Bale have also done it.
Well, it's great when my kids say to me, Dad, were you actually any good when you played football? And I say, listen, come on. If I've done the same as Cristiano Ronaldo and Gareth Bale and we're the only 3 to have done it, I must have been okay.
Yeah, it's not. But what does it do to you as an individual? Were you cocky at the time if you look back?
No. Does it affect you?
No.
Now, anyone who knows me would know it affected me not one jot. If anything, it just made me want to go and play even more. I didn't realise, if I'm absolutely honest with you, I didn't realise what I'd achieved until many years later, because the manager at the time, Ron Saunders, didn't allow me to go and receive the trophies at the dinner because, of all things, we had a cup final replay to play against Everton on the Wednesday night.
Wow.
So I wasn't allowed to go. He banned me from going. And it really took me about 5 or 6 years till I started going there myself. And then I went and watched Reedy pick up his. And it's probably about then when I started to realise just what I had achieved. And then at that time, no one had done it. And like 20 years later, no one had done it. And it took Ronaldo to do it. So it took me a while. It didn't affect me at all when I was playing, because I didn't really understand what I'd done. But I'm still very proud of it.
Shame it was maybe soured in that way.
Yeah, it was. It was a little. No reason not to let me go, Saunders. Mm. But he was a kind of manager who hated personal accolades. He was very much the team's the most important thing, and an individual getting awards doesn't cut any slack with him, and he just banned me from going. End off. That was it.
You went to Wolves, and obviously there was a lot of cash paid for you. Again, as a young man, are you noticing the fee?
I'm aware of it. I mean, you know, that was a time when Villa were doing great. I really didn't need to leave Villa, but I fell out badly with a manager who had accused me of cheating him, the club, the players, the fans, about not wanting to play, which was crazy because I played in my life more games half injured than probably most players have done. So I fell out with him and I demanded a transfer. At the time, it was difficult because there was a £500,000 ceiling in Europe and there wasn't in England. So I was kind of limited where, you know, the kind of clubs that could afford to pay that kind of money. And as it happened, Steve Daly was transferred from Wolves to Man City. Malcolm Allison bought him for about £1.45 million. John Barnwell thought, wow, this is the chance. Like, I'm going to go and get Andy. I only have to add 50-100 grand to that and I can get him. So he did. And, you know, I was happy to go. I knew a lot of the players. They had a lot of really good experience. Emlyn Hughes was there, in fact. Emlyn was one of his last, after he left Liverpool, came to play with Wolves for a couple of years, or a year. Kenny Hibbert, Willie Carr, all these really, really good players, that John Richards that I had known, and one or two real good kids. So I went there and we had a great first season. We won the League Cup. We finished fourth in the league. It would have been a Champions League spot now. And it looked like everything was going to be up and up, but the club had huge financial problems. It went into liquidation. It was three very turbulent league years for all of us who were at the club. Relegation, promotion, relegation again, that kind of thing. And when I was getting to the age I was at, 28, I was beginning to think that was it. And there was nothing, might be no more glory left for me. But my God, how wrong could I have been?
Yeah, the age of 28. There was interest from Manchester United, is that right?
Yes. Yeah, there was.
How close?
Very close, I think. Big Ron was manager of Manchester United. And I know Ron was a fan of mine. I know that. Because when he was manager of West Brom in the mid-70s, I was playing at Villa in my pomp and really in my prime. And I used to torment his team quite a lot. As I said, I got a hat-trick last day of the season to join Malcolm McDonald. And I always used to play really well against two good centre-backs, John Whalen and Alistair Robertson. But I always got the better of him and I always enjoyed playing against him. And I think Big Ron was a fan. He went to United. He realised I was coming for nothing, basically. It was nothing. And he inquired. I had some treatment in Manchester, a physio called Freddie Griffiths. Freddie was very much a physio who a lot of players who didn't play for or didn't base in Manchester would go to. And I was sent up to have a thigh strain treated by him. And obviously he noticed my knee had been operated on a couple of times. Big Ron asked him, listen, I'm thinking of signing Andy. Do you think he'll give me 30-35 games a season? And he went, well, I'm not sure. His knee's quite bad. So that put Ron off. Ron told me many years ago that put him off and he went elsewhere. So it might have been all different if Freddie Griffiths had said, no, you can go ahead with Andy. Then it might have been a very, very different history for me.
Because in your head, and as you were just saying there, you were wondering whether there was any more glory days for you. And was that about the injuries that you were suffering as well?
No, because my injuries had gone. You know, I was living with previous injuries. I had my last sort of knee op way before, when I was at Villa. So I think when I was at 27, 28, I hadn't had an operation for quite a few years. It was mainly the legacy of the operations, because in those days it wasn't keyhole surgery and very attentive surgery. It was, you know, slice his knee open, I can gouge the problem out, and I can stitch it back up again. So it was a bit like that. And you know, my knee took a bit of a pounding. I had six operations on it in total in my life, and just on the one knee. So I had to cope with quite a bit. And you know, when we had 3 years like we had at Wolves, and you know, at that time when I was sitting there with Kenny Hibbert and Willie Carr, were discussing sort of early November of 83, where the hell we were all going to be going, it didn't look a bright future for me at all. And it was one that I wasn't quite sure where I was going to end up, what I was going to do.
Did Everton come out of the blue? Where was the first contact with Howard Kendall?
Totally out of the blue. I had been out for lunch after training with Kenny Hibbett, Willie Carr. We were discussing what was going to happen, what we thought we could do. As I said, great pros. We were all concerned about how poorly we were doing, and we were trying to solve it. I went home, and I got a call from the then manager. I think it was Graham Hawkins, who was at Wolves. I got home, and about an hour later, he texted me and said, "You need to get back to the ground." And this was the time when the club was in liquidation. So there were assets, and I was an asset. And they were offered, I think, just over 100,000. Seems nothing now. And they were in the stage that they just had to accept it because they were skint, basically. He said, "So can you come back here, pick up your medical records and drive up to Goodison and meet Howard?" So I actually went and met Howard at the Queen's Head. As you know it very well, I'm sure.
Yeah.
As was Howard's wont, it was brilliant. He came to me here on lunch with you. I met him, chatted with him, loved him. Didn't take me long to think I was coming. And wait to put pen to paper. We did the medical. The doc said to me, "Oh, your knee's a bit swollen, Andy." I had played on the Wednesday night, I think, for Wolves in a cup tie. That's why I missed. It was ridiculous. I played in a cup tie I shouldn't have done, but I wanted to play because we were in trouble at Wolves. So I played in that on the Wednesday night, got me cup tied, so I missed that magnificent run Everton had through to the League Cup final that year. And my knee was a bit swollen, as it used to do after a game. I had to ice it. So the doc said, "Ooh, it's a bit swollen, Andy. What will you be doing if we don't sign you?" And I just said, "I'll tell you what I'll be doing, Doc. I'll be playing for Wolves on Saturday." He went, "That's good enough for me. Right, it's done."
You're in.
And we did.
And it was perfect. And were you excited about the prospects with Everton? Did you even do much research as to what sort of squad you were joining?
I didn't need to do research. I mean, I did need to find out one or two things about the guys, the young kids that were coming in, Trevor Stevens, Kevin Sheedy's, Graham Sharps, who I know Graham slightly, Adrian Heath, Gary Stevens, you know, even Kevin Ratcliffe, a young player who hadn't broken any side. So I needed to sort of, I knew about Reedy, obviously, and people like that. Terry Curran I knew about. But there was a lot of players I didn't. But the club itself, no, there was no research in it. I knew Everton. I knew its glorious number nines that had preceded me and Graham, and was very well aware of what was required. And I was really excited. It was like I had two or three years of really being flat as a footballer, and suddenly you get your mojo back, and that was what Evan did. It gave me my mojo back, and without even kicking a ball, it gave me my belief back that someone wanted me and felt I could do a job for them. And that was a huge confidence boost for me to feel like that again, something I hadn't felt like for maybe a couple of years.
Reinvigorated Andy Gray. Of course, the start wasn't easy. In the beginning of the 83-84 campaign, four wins and seven goals in the first 12 league games, and the fans were more than a bit restless.
Yeah, they were very restless, you know, 83-84. You know, I had arrived and, you know, it wasn't great. Although I was excited, I understand. I think we'd just been thumped 3-0 in the local derby as well the weekend before I joined. So that wasn't a great, I wasn't joining a club that was full of confidence, I knew that. But I was joining a club that was full of potential, I also thought that. And, you know, we got down to it and you know, up until from then till about, I think the game was probably mid-December, late December, we went to Birmingham City in a league match. Maybe it was Boxing Day, roughly over then, and I remember Howard coming in to the hotel, sitting us all down, and he said, "Okay," and he played pretty much the same team, and it was the same guys, and we weren't quite functioning. There was potential there, but it wasn't quite happening. And I remember him sitting us down and saying, "Right, I'm afraid this is it, guys." He said, if we can't do it today," he said, "I'm really have to go to shift the team around. I'm going to have to make major changes. I'm going to have to give the place a shake up." Now, whether that worked or whether we just suddenly clicked, but we beat Birmingham that day. And we went on, and a couple of weeks later, we had a great result in Stoke in the FA Cup.
The game you scored in, diving header.
Yeah, that famous day that Howard opened the windows. And the Everton fans were just outside, and the noise was deafening as we were trying to get ready for the game, and we all felt, no, we can't let this lot down here today. Absolutely no chance. And that was his team talk. Just opened the windows and let the noise come in. And we went and beat Stoke, and we grew from there. There's obviously the Oxford game that many people put down as a pivotal one. That was a hugely important game, but I always believe that was one. I think there was two or three. That was one. Birmingham was one, the league game, and Stoke was in the cup game. Those were three, around about that time, those couple of months, those were three massive games that had they gone the other way, then the whole history of Everton might have been totally different.
Could have changed. Did you start to feel like a band of brothers almost?
Yeah. Well, we liked each other for a start. You know, we knew there was a diverse, eclectic mix of personalities. You know, so it was good in that respect because opposites attract, so to say. And we had a lot of players. We had some quiet ones in the team. We had some loud ones. Well, well, we had me and Rudy.
Yeah.
and a lot of young pros so keen to learn and so keen to succeed. And that came through. And, you know, when the bandwagon started rolling and the cup run started to kick in and the league form started to improve and we started to slowly but surely, well, it wasn't slowly, it was quite quickly, climb the league and put runs together, the belief was just unbelievable. It was unbelievable. Belief was extraordinary.
Let's leap to the FA Cup final and Wofford and a 2-0 win. Of course, you again a header. You loved header goals, didn't you?
I did. I mean, I'd struggle these days, wouldn't I?
First trophy in 14 years for the club. So without doubt, an incredibly momentous point for Everton.
Yeah, very aware of it as well. We all were as Evertonians. We knew the importance of it. We knew the gap that there had been since the trophy. And we was really confident. I was worried, I mean, because I was like the senior pro, obviously, me and Reedy were the two senior pros. There was a bunch of young kids who were I remember in the build-up to the cup, you know, you do all these interviews and there's all these things done. And I kept hearing Inshay and Sharpie and other boys, Watford, that we'll beat them, not a problem. We've already taken care of them in the league. Not a problem here. And I'm going, no, come on, boys, listen. We need to just tone it down a bit. I know your confidence is unbelievable. And I was saying, you know, respect Watford. We've got some really good players there. You know, Morris Johnson, John Barnes, George Riley, dangerous, could harm us. So we've got to be careful. We've got to play at our best. The boys are going, no, rubbish. We'll beat them. Don't you worry about that. So my kind of calm head was having no effect on these boys. They were just so convinced that they were just an obstacle on the way to walking up those steps and picking up the FA Cup. And they were right.
And they say, obviously, you win one and all of a sudden it's easier to win more after that. But was it... Was that an obvious sensation for you as a group? There was a fundamental belief put into you all after that point.
Yes, 100%. Howard went out and bought Paul Bracewell and Pat Van Den Hal. Basically, I think that was it with regards to people who were going to shape the team. So we brought the two in. That was tough on, you know, people like John Bailey, Kevin Richardson, maybe who... Alan Harper, who weren't going to get maybe as many games as they had done the previous season. But they were definitely two massive players for us in 84, 85. You know, Pat was a complete athlete. Could play anywhere along the back four. Hard as nails. Left foot, right foot, very good. Paul Bracewell was just Brace, you know. Like Reedy, they were two of a kind. They kept the thing going. They worked their socks off. They got it. They gave it. They influenced the game. They were just—he was just a terrific footballer, Paul, and he complemented Reedy so well. And you know, because we're so alike, and not in personality, obviously. Brace was such a quiet lad compared to Reedy, but in the way they went about the football pitch, their desire to do the same sort of thing was huge. So they were big additions for us in that summer. And when we started, of course, we lost the first two games, and everyone's thinking, "Wow. What's happened here?" We got gubbed, I think, by Tottenham. 4-0, 4-1.
4-1, yeah.
And then we went to West Brom and got beat 2. And then we had a Friday night game, I think it was, against Chelsea, away. I remember Howard coming in. I had been injured. I got injured in, I got injured pre-season. And I had a sort of, and I was out the side. I missed the Charity Shield, which I was gutted about, Community Shield, as it is now. So I missed that. And obviously the lads had played so well, or were doing so well, started to play without me. And I didn't get back in the team. I remember the talk Howard had at Chelsea when he said, listen, I don't care what happens tonight, but we're not conceding a goal. He said, we've already conceded 6 in 2 games. That's not acceptable. He said, if we get 0-0, I'll take that. We'll get our season up and running. And we went one better. Kevin Richardson nicked a goal. Richard nicked a goal, a really good goal. And we won it 1-0. And then we kicked on then. And I just, I guess it did snowball, because the change in mood after that victory was just extraordinary.
You just became invincible, really, didn't you? I mean,
pretty much.
The two additions, you mentioned Van den Howe and Paul Bracewell, it almost completed the jigsaw, didn't it?
Yes.
And I think top by November from Boxing Day, 28 match unbeaten run.
I know.
Fairly incredible by any standard.
Well, there was some, you know, some interesting little stories along the way, because as I said, I'd been out of the team, and I came back and I was asked to come back in, and we played Newcastle away. Tough game. Going to be, and Howard decided to bring me back when I was fit and play with Inchy and leave Graham out. Of course, Graham was absolutely furious, and I remember being with him at night, and he's saying, that's it, I'm asking for a move, I'm not having this, I can't be left out, this is ridiculous, blah. And I'm saying, Shappy, come on, calm down, listen, come on, just take a bit of time, you think, just be careful. You know, you never know what's going to happen in this game. Anything can happen. I mean, fateful words I uttered that I didn't know 24 hours later were going to affect me. Because the next day when we did play, we beat them 3-2, I think. I scored the winner. But what I didn't know is during the game, I'd broken my metatarsal. So when I came off, I said to Doc, I feel like my front and top of my foot's a bit sore, Doc. He said, okay, we'll get an x-ray. So we had an x-ray, and it was, sure enough, fractured of a couple of metatarsal bones on the top of my foot. So it's a five, six weeks, you know, recovery. So I said to Shappy, there you go. Now, if you'd have been a transfer request, you'd be looking stupid now, because you're back in the team. And, of course, as history shows, the two of them, him and Inchy, went on in that spell I was injured to be the best double act, I think, in English football. They were unplayable at times. They were like the Keegan and Toshack of Everton. You know, a big man, short man, wonderfully well together, both scoring goals, both difficult to handle, both full of confidence. And when I was fit, I understood that Howard couldn't put me back in the side. I wasn't daft. And I think I sat there for, I don't know how many games I was sub for. I was sub for the famous 5-1 game against United when we blitzed them. Got on for 20 minutes in that. And I was just having a little cameo role every now and again. But I had no arguments about it. I couldn't go to knock on the door and say, Howard, come on, for God's sake, Howard, I don't need to be back in this team. Because I appreciated what was happening. And then Sheffield Wednesday arrives. Tough, uncompromising Howard Wilkinson side at Goodison, and Adrian gets that horrific injury, and then I'm asked to come on that game, which we won. I think a penalty, Chappie scored a penalty, we won 1-0. It's a really tight game, but we ended up winning it, which kept the run going. And then I went 13 games or 12 games without a goal in all competitions. It was the most frustrating time of my life. We were beating everybody. We were winning football matches. But could Andy Gray score a goal? Could I score a goal? No, I couldn't.
You thought your mojo had gone.
The bar. No, I was just hitting everything. It was either going straight at the goalie, it was hitting the post, it was hitting the bar. No, I didn't think my mojo had gone, because I always believed if I put myself in there, and this is what I used to tell kids when I was coaching, never worry if you're missing chances. The time to worry is when you're not getting them. Because if you're not getting chances, then you're not putting yourself in the right position, or the team's not playing well. Now, that wasn't happening. We were playing well. And I was putting myself in the right position. I just couldn't get a bloody goal. So it was a really good time because we were winning, but it was a really frustrating time because I wasn't contributing in the way I wanted to. And then I think that famous game at Leicester, Filbert Street, turned everything around for me. And it was a big, big day in my Everton career and Everton season and what happened from then on in.
It's fascinating because from the outside you don't realise that players are going through such personal torment when you're looking at a team performing so well.
Yeah.
And particularly a team that wins the league by, you know, with 90 points, the gap to Liverpool 13 points. You would think everyone was on cloud nine.
Yeah, I know. Well, we were, but there's still a few demons in there. You have your own individual one. And at that time, had we won the league and I had been on that run at the end of the season, I would have had mixed emotions. I'd have been delighted I was part of a championship winning side, but I'd have been gutted personally because I would have felt I hadn't contributed. Thankfully, there were plenty of games left in that season, both in the league and the Cup Winners' Cup, for me to have an influence in the way I would like to have had an influence, and it was sensational.
How important is that league winner's medal to you, that individual medal?
Unbelievably so. And especially in those days, because there was a dominant team in the country, and that was Liverpool. And, you know, if you look at the history of the Premier League, there's only Manchester City, Manchester United, Chelsea, Arsenal, and Blackburn Rovers, I think. There's only five teams won the title in the last 25 years. So that shows you know, you need to have played at one of the big clubs to have done it. You know, at that time, we weren't one of the biggest clubs in the country. We were having a troubled time. Howard, the year I joined in that November, December, there was petitions up to get Howard sacked. So there weren't happy times there. And to have taken this team, this potential, this group of players had, and in 18 months and 2 years, turn it into the quality of football that they played, and the quality of the team ethic that we had was miraculous. So to have won the league title, I never thought I would. When I hit 28, I thought that was it. I thought my best chance was at Villa because we had a brilliant side and we went close a couple of times. But I thought at 28, this side, I knew this side had potential, but I didn't think it would come that quickly. That's what I would say. So winning that and being able to call yourself a league title winner was something special for me.
It was so nearly a treble that season. It was a double with European success. And, of course, one of the famous nights at Goodison Park. So the game with Bayern Munich, which I think, is it your favourite game when you reflect on your time at Everton Football Club?
Well, I've always said to anyone who wants to listen, my family know it, that if when the good Lord decides my time on this earth is over, if I can take one game, I was going to say up to heaven, but some people might say I'll be going the other way. But if I can take one game with me, it would be that one, that night. And I don't know how many were there. I think there must have been 54,000 crammed into Goodison that night, something like that. I defy any of them who were there to say that I would guess 90% would say, I've never seen a better game. I've never been at a more emotional evening. It was just a roller coaster ride, and it was just an amazing performance from the boys. Unbelievable. And this is against arguably one of the top five teams in Europe at that particular time. So we weren't talking about Rapid Vienna, who, all accounts, really weren't very good, and we should have beaten a lot easier than we did. We knew the final was Bayern Munich. We knew we had to beat this team. This is an iconic football side, who are steeped in the tradition of winning things. And here was Ragas Rovers, if you like. Here was us coming away, all these young kids and a couple of old codgers like me and Reedy, with huge ambition and an astute, clever manager and coach, setting us up right. Here were we coming into this game to try and knock them out in the semi-final.
Do you remember the buzz around the ground? Do you remember the buzz, the atmosphere pre-match walking out or how you sort of felt?
I felt nervous. I think we all did. But I've always said nerves in an athlete or nerves in a footballer are good as long as you use them right. As long as you don't let the nerves affect your performance, but use them as a strength which you can do. But so I think most of us were nervous because we had respect for Bayern Munich. But as we came up that little tunnel and arrived at the top of the steps and hit the touchline, wow, it was deafening. It was deafening.
You had a hand in all three goals that night. Yeah. Of course, scored one yourself. So an all-round performance for yourself. Your pass for your involvement in Trevor Stevens' goal, fabulous as well. And that's when you know that you've taken the tie away completely from them.
Yes. I mean, I almost got sent off in the first half. It's something, thankfully, most Evertonians have forgotten. But I remember when it was 0-0, about 20 minutes in, that the ball was played up to me halfway line. If you ever watch the tape again, have a look at it. And somebody comes in and clips me from the back. Now, it wasn't a bad one. It was just a little tap, but I lost it. And as I was falling away from him, I swung my right leg to have a slash at him. And I look stupid, thankfully. I miss him by about 2 yards. But to this day, I still think if I had managed to keep my balance when I turned and hit him and swung at him and I caught him, I'd have been off. Without a shadow of a doubt, they'd have had to send me off. And I always sit here and think, wow, that's when you know you're lucky, because I missed him by miles. As you say, I went on to be involved in all the goals, including scoring one, and how that could have changed that night if I'd only made contact with a wild kick out at one of the Bayern Munich defenders. And thankfully, I missed him, and thankfully, the referee was sympathetic on the night. And yeah, I think when Trevor went in and I played him through and he spun away, I spun away towards the dugout area where Howard and all the guys were halfway on the pitch. And I knew they weren't coming back in it. They weren't scoring. They were lucky to get the one that night, and there was no way they were getting another two. That was the definitive performance for me. To go a goal down at half-time, to go into the dressing room, to be flat, not flat, but disappointed, not flat. That's the wrong word to use. We're a little disappointed and upset that we'd allowed them the goal. But Howard was brilliant that night. Calm as you like, cool as you like, confident as you like. Not a problem, guys. You've been brilliant. You've been fantastic. I don't need to tell you anything except keep it going. He said, these won't be able to cope with your intensity. He said, I think a few of them are flagging already. Keep the pace up. Keep the intensity up. We'll get one. And sure enough, he was right. And we didn't get one. We got three. And I always remember, in fairness, as Udo Lattek, somebody like that, who did a big piece after that, and said, I've just seen the dawn of a new way of playing football. It was so complimentary about the way we're going about it, about Everton and the way we played and the intensity of our play and the desire to win impressed the Germans hugely. And if you impress German football and German coaches, then you must be doing something right.
There's a wonderful emotion in your voice when you talk about it. When Howard talked after the game to you guys individually, was he the man who just wanted to celebrate the group?
Everyone was there. Obviously, the chairman was in. Sir Philip was in there. And everybody was there. The only downside of the night is when we all disappeared from Goodison that night, and I went back to, I think, Southport area where I was living with Sharpie and a few others to celebrate in a restaurant. Reedy had a big bad cut on his leg that night. And so, of course, at the end of the game, he just stuffed some cotton wool in a big hole in his leg and carried on. If you ever look at the footage, have a look at Reedy's sock. At the end of the game, he's got one white sock and one red sock because of the blood that was pouring out of his leg. So he's getting ready, and the doc says, sorry, Reedy. Doc Kevin comes in. Reedy, sorry, you can't go out with the boys. What? I can't go out with the boys? What do you mean I can't go out with the boys? Sorry, got to get you to hospital. We need to get this leg treated. So while we were all out there enjoying ourselves, singing and celebrating, Reedy, who had contributed so much, was in a hospital bed in Liverpool.
If there's one person that wouldn't go down well with, it's him, isn't it?
No.
Look, we've got to finish it off to allow you to get on. But in just 19 months, I don't think you feel you could have achieved much more, could you, Andy, with Everton?
Yeah, we could have won the cup. We could have won the FA Cup and done the treble. I believe that. I believe we were better than United. We'd beaten them 5-1. We'd gone to Old Trafford, I think, and beaten them in the FA Cup. Was it the FA Cup we beat them in 1-0? Or the League Cup? We'd gone there and joined in the League 1-1. We were a better side than United. And I think it was a game too far. You know, to play to be asked to play a cup final basically 2.5 days after you've played a European final was a huge ask. It was wrong. The authorities hadn't thought it through, obviously because they didn't think it would happen. And, you know, when we got to Wembley, I think the tanks were empty for most of us. And that's a disappointment, because I think Big Ron knew we were better than them as well. I think he'd be honest enough to admit that. But we didn't have enough in the tank, and that's the sadness of all. But how can I be sad? You know, we won the league, we won the FA Cup, and we won the European Cup Winners' Cup. I was part of the most successful side in Everton's history, and that's a glorious history. So what is it to be sad about?
It's wonderful to hear you reflect.
For me, it didn't last a bit longer.
Yeah. You can't have everything, Andy, but it's an incredible legacy you left there and wonderful memories you've shared with us. Thank you very much indeed for your time.
Absolute pleasure.
All the best. That's Andy Gray with his Match of My Life. And while we could have gone on for ages, there's so much more we could have gone through. But he just touched on some of the major points and you could hear the emotion in his voice. Today's Match of My Life guest, Andy Gray.
Here's Kergel now with a chance for Bayern Munich. Edge of the penalty area. Great save by Neville Southall. Hoeneß still has an opportunity. Great chance for him to score, and he has done. And that is the away goal that Bayern Munich have been seeking. And Dieter Hoeneß has scored it.
Bounced off Argenthaler. Had a play for an Everton throw. 20 yards from the corner flag on the right-hand side. Gary Stevens will take it. In towards Andy Gray. Up go the heads. Flicked on towards Sharp. Oh, it's there! Graham Sharp has touched it in. And Everton are level. Andy Gray's header onto the near post. Forced in by Graham Sharp, who has scored in every round of the competition and keeps up the record at the time that Everton needed it most. One more, and it's Rotterdam.
Stevens takes a throw in towards the near post. Faf held it. No, he didn't. Gray locked it in. It's a goal! Andy Gray has put Everton in front. Bayern are furious because Faf came for the long throw. Felt he was impeded, didn't collect it. But Andy Gray didn't stand around to find out. He thumped it in the back of the net. Celebration time at Goodison Park. They're very close to their first European final now, because Andy Gray, a hat-trick in the quarter-final, has come up with a crucial semi-final goal. And Everton are in front and are on the way to Holland. Forced on towards Andy Gray, breaking inside the Bayern half. Trevor Stephen has a great chance. Edge of the penalty area. Trevor Stephen sends Everton to the final. 3-1 the score on the night. And that will be the goal that does it. Trevor Stephen's first ever in European competition sends Everton to their first ever final. And you can tell your grandchildren about this night. Liverpool are there in the European Cup final. Everton are now there in the Cup Winners' Cup final. Merseyside rules.
Match of My Life. Life stories and greatest games.
Radio City Talk.